Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martinis coming up.
Hey, really glad you're with us for the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We would love to tell you that we've got a good martini today, but we don't. We also don't have any bad martinis. They're all crazy today, so buckle up for that. Jim, I guess if there's a good martini, we're only a couple weeks away from training camp starting in the NFL, and I've seen a lot of workout videos from Justin Fields for the Bears, and I'm guessing it's a good thing we're not seeing the workout videos from Zach Wilson.
Look, Jets fans have said, why can't we have a quarterback who can score? And Zach Wilson is determined to deliver.
Wow.
He also might throw some touchdowns this year. We'll see. Yes.
Could be the case. If you have no idea what we're talking about, that's probably a good thing, especially if you have children around. Okay, on to our first crazy martini now. And it's usually the president of the United States that we're focusing on when it comes to saying the wrong thing, mangling words, just telling stories that make no sense or are outright provable lies. But Jill Biden decided to get on the act yesterday, not with the lying part, just the cringeworthy pandering to the community she was speaking with, in this case, Latinos, but of course, for the left, you got to call them Latinx, down in San Antonio, Texas. And so she was trying to say the strength of our country is in its diversity, and this is how it came out.
But we can't get those things on our own. Raul helped build this organization with the understanding that the diversity of this community, as distinct as the Bogotas of the Bronx, as beautiful as the blossoms of Miami, and as unique as the breakfast tacos here in San Antonio, is your strength.
Well, I think diversity is our strength and we're all pulling in the same direction from the ideals that this country was founded on, but that's perhaps a discussion for another time. Jim, the one that stood out to me, of course, was Bogotas. She means bodegas, or at least her speechwriter did.
Bogotas? Wasn't that Yoda's home planet, Bogota? I'm sorry, Dagobah.
I thought it was the capital of Colombia, but nonetheless.
There we go.
Nonetheless, then she goes and gives specific examples in other places too, including breakfast tacos in San Antonio. So a lot of cringeworthy pandering here. And the odd part is it's not just the right that's hitting her. Hispanic journalists, as you noted today in the Morning Jolt, you can almost hear their audible sigh as they get tired of trying to clean up the messes that the Bidens make with all their speech writing mistakes or just their delivery mistakes. But people are tired of covering for them.
Greg, Jill Biden is trying to make what is almost a generic, anodyne, non-controversial point that Americans' Latino communities are very diverse. If you talk to a Cuban American from Miami, they may have different views on all kinds of different things than Mexican Americans from Texas, or Puerto Ricans up in New York City, or Dominicans, or Guatemalans, or Colombians. Yes, you should not paint them all with one broad brush. Unfortunately, Jill Biden managed to pick probably the most cliched examples possible. The bodegas, not Bogotas, the blossoms, the breakfast tacos. I guess we should all be thankful. And they're as fast as Speedy Gonzalez from the Warner Brothers cartoons, or something like that. But beyond that, I also observe the metaphor doesn't really work. Because if you go to a restaurant and you order two of the same kind of breakfast taco, you can get all kinds of different stuff in them. But basically, it's usually, eggs, cheese, bacon, some sort of pork product, something like that. Maybe a little vegetables here and there. The tacos aren't going to look all that different. So it's if you'd said, the Minnesotans are all as distinct as a pile of pancakes, I think people would recognize, well, wait a second, that's probably not the best comparison because they aren't particularly diverse, what you're talking about. Pancakes are pancakes. Now, of course, by the way, I'm sure I've irritated both the Scandinavian Americans of Minnesota and the pancake American community with that statement. But the gist being that, this was allegedly written by a professional speechwriter, and you'd like to think somebody would have looked at that and just said, there's got to be a better way to say that that really comes across as a, cliched stereotype. In fact, that's what the National Association of Hispanic Journalists said. We are not tacos. Greg, did you ever think you'd see that statement in a press release? We are not tacos. I can only imagine how it felt to type that. Our heritage as Latinos is shaped by various diasporas, cultures, and food traditions. Do not reduce us to stereotypes. No doubt this is because, you know, we're seeing more and more Latinos and Hispanics voting for Republicans. Many Democrats thought they had those demographics locked up forever, and lo and behold, they don't like these demographics don't like a floundering economy and runaway inflation and high gas prices and food prices as much as the next guy. But I think what's interesting is the reaction to it. And look, it's the first lady, not the president, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. There was probably a time not that long ago they would have said, this isn't worth making us a fight over. The first lady's not intending to offend anyone. Look, she was, born, she's, well into her 60s. I'm sorry, 71. She grew up in the 50s and 60s. She just used clumsy words. Let's not make a big deal out of this. And I get the feeling they can't. They just can't do it anymore, particularly for a woman who's married to, to go to work in a 7-Eleven, you need to have a slight Indian accent and, Shylocks and, are you a junkie? And if you didn't vote for me, you ain't black, and all the different things that Joe Biden has done for a really long, it's interesting to hear all the discussions about white privilege, because I think a lot of us on the right of center spectrum would say there's also white Democrat privilege, in which prominent white Democrats, usually of an older generation, use language that is just not used anymore. I know back, during the campaign trail, Biden referred to this leader of Singapore as the wisest man in the Orient. And, you find yourself saying, Oriental is a reference to a rug, not a people anymore. That term really has been largely retired. And just it's an indication that, these sorts of things that would get most Republicans or right of center figures crucified, Joe Biden kind of walks around, blundering around, making these kinds of statements, and everybody kind of pretends they don't hear him, gives a little mild tisk-tisk. I think it was the Anti-Defamation League, when he referred to those Shylocks, said, please stop referring to people as Shylocks. He kept using this archaic, really, a language that comes across as offensive to a lot of modern ears. And the Democratic Party is supposed to be the party that is super sensitive to these sorts of things. And I think the National Association of Hispanic Journalists they couldn't take it anymore. They can't pretend not to notice. And so they had to call it out. And she's issued an apology. And I don't think Jill Biden, I don't think she has any animosity towards Latinos or Hispanics. I don't think there's any deliberate effort to mock anyone. I just think that there's a certain arrogance and presumptuousness there. I think there's just a certain tone deafness and just a belief that she, because she's a Democrat, nothing she says could ever be offensive. And it is a little disturbing that, besides not mispronouncing bodegas, okay, anybody can mispronounce a word. I'm sure there are people who keep a running tally of my pronunciations on this podcast. But just the clumsiness, the clunkiness, the stereotypes there, it didn't jump out to anybody in the White House at an event to ingratiate Jill Biden and Joe Biden and Democrats to the Latino community. It's not the biggest thing in the world. I think there's something good about the fact that Jill Biden got called out for this. And I think that there's, it's an indicator that the average Democrat is just getting less and less patient with the Bidens as time goes on.
Yeah, I think it's the pandering even more than the exact language. I mean, we're certainly not the speech police here, the politically correct speech police. But, when this comes up, and you mentioned a whole litany of things Joe Biden said that is obvious pandering. But just with the Latino community, you've got the breakfast taco situation. Remember when Joe Biden was on the campaign trail and he whipped out his phone and played some sort of popular Latino music there to make it sound like it was something he listened to, when it's obvious that he had no idea what he was doing. And then I just heard a clip from Biden. I don't know how recent it was, but I just heard the clip recently where Biden was saying the reason that Latinos' numbers of vaccinations weren't as high as he would have liked was because they're worried about getting deported. So the idea in his mind is that, most of these people aren't here legally, which is, there are a lot of illegal immigrants in this country. But the idea that that's the entire Latino population, is painting with such a ridiculously broad brush. And like you said it perfectly, they care about the things the rest of us care about: inflation, prices, gas prices, our standing in the world, the border, everything. And for some reason, they have to keep trying to pigeonhole all these different demographic groups as if they only care about certain things that are somewhat unique to their life. It's just weird.
Yeah, and one of the, you know, when I was watching, you know, that and various other outreach, I kind of periodically wonder, I'd really love to know the last time either Biden interacted with someone who was Latino, not at a luncheon, not in some sort of formal political environment, but, you know, do they have any longtime Latino friends? Do they have anybody who they see outside of a political, you know, coalition building role that are in their lives? Maybe it's the case. Maybe, you know, who knows? But it just kind of seemed tone deaf. Like all of this is entirely theoretical to them. Like she, you know, a question, when was the last time Jill Biden ever shopped in a bodega?
I don't know. Been a while, probably. Not that I can say I've done much better, but I do know how to say it. And I'm also not trying to pander to people on issues that supposedly only matter to them. So on these particular issues, Jim, just kind of as an exit here, I feel like the Bidens are taking on more and more water from their own people here. So they keep saying they're going to run again in 24, but I feel like the odds of that actually happening are getting less and less. Nothing official, of course, will be said until after the midterms, if at all. But I just feel like, with his numbers continuing to crater, there's no bounce back whatsoever. They just keep heading in a negative direction for him. Somebody's going to tell him not to do it, and he's probably going to listen eventually. He wants to, and she definitely wants him to, I think. But for some reason, I think the pressure is going to get too high, and the question is whether he listens to it. But we'll find out next year, I guess.
Well, no, Greg, I think that's a very accurate point. That when Joe Biden said, if you're not voting for me, you're not black. Look, the NAACP and various other African-American groups could have given him a great deal of grief over that. I think it's, you know, it would be more than fair to say, who the hell is Joe Biden to run around deciding who's authentically black? But they chose not to, because by and large, those groups are left of center. By and large, they support the Democrats. By, you know, the leadership of those organizations is certainly not friendly towards Donald Trump. And they were, you know, hoping Biden would win. So they're willing to hold their tongue, look at their feet, pretend they didn't see it, pretend they didn't hear it, hope the whole thing passes in a news cycle or two. I think this sort of thing, and, you know, stuff like the Atlantic running a piece saying Biden shouldn't run again, and the New York Times running this, you know, front page story on how devastating his poll numbers are and how many Democrats want somebody else to run. All of that stuff is basically saying, Biden, we're not doing this again. We're not propping you up any longer. You're on your own, and you look a lot different when we're not there to cover for you.
Can Republicans actually take advantage of that in the midterms and beyond? That's what we're going to see here in the near future. All right, on to our first great sponsor here, and that is Bambi. Look, HR is always challenging, and right now with inflation happening and needing to keep the book straight, that's always a challenge, but so is just dealing with the people that you've hired to do your work. HR is not just about avoiding risk. As a business leader, you should do right by the people you employ, and that's why you need Bambi.
Bambi is an HR platform built for businesses like yours, so you can automate the most important HR practices and get your own dedicated HR manager. First, Bambi's HR Autopilot automates your core policies, workplace training, and employee feedback. Then, your dedicated HR manager will help you navigate the more complex parts of HR and guide you to compliance, available by phone, email, or real-time chat. An in-house HR manager can cost up to $80,000 a year, but with Bambi, your dedicated HR manager starts at just $99 a month. No hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime.
Yeah, as Jim just said, this is a no-brainer. You can get excellent HR management at a fraction of the cost of hiring it full-time in-house. Just $99 a month, and they give you excellent service. Bambi has received thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, and their customers are four times less likely to have a claim filed against them. So if you run your own business, focus on your business and let Bambi run your HR. Go to Bambi.com/martini right now for your free HR audit. That's spelled Bambee.com/martini. Bambi.com/martini.
Former Trump White House official Brooke Rollins explains how she and other conservatives are preparing to help the next Republican president advance their agenda and successfully fight the bureaucracy. I'm Bill Walton. On the latest edition of The Bill Walton Show, Rollins also explains how President Trump was able to accomplish so much despite the government working against him, and how getting the right congressional staffers is vital. Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Jim, on to our second crazy martini here. And this is a story that the left has been pushing around for days, if not more than a week now. With the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court, the left has tried to throw out a ton of really weird accusations about what will happen in certain situations, like you can't get treatment for an ectopic pregnancy, which is obviously untrue in all 50 states and anywhere in the United States. Then there were people saying, I can't get treatment for the abortion I needed when my baby died inside my womb. Well, that is a miscarriage or a stillbirth in some cases, I guess. And that is also not an abortion. And so then they went after the pregnancy centers. And now they're talking about this 10-year-old girl in Ohio who was impregnated after being raped. And because she was beyond 6 weeks pregnant, allegedly, she couldn't get an abortion in Ohio and had to seek one in Indiana. Now, this story was first floated out there by an abortion doctor named Caitlin Bernard. But what's odd is that nobody can verify any of the details here. You know, if a 10-year-old child is raped, there should probably be a criminal complaint or labs that were done to try and figure out DNA and so forth. Apparently, none of that's happened. The attorney general for the state of Ohio is Dave Yost, and he appeared on Fox News last night with Jesse Waters and gave a pretty clear explanation about what hasn't happened as far as he can tell in his state. Apologies for the audio quality. I believe this was how it aired on Fox, but you can certainly make out what he's saying.
Not a whisper. And we work closely with we have a decentralized law enforcement system in Ohio. But we have regular contact with prosecutors and local police and sheriffs. Not a whisper anywhere. Something maybe even more telling, Jesse, is my office runs the state crime lab. Any case like this, you're going to have a rape kit, you're going to have biological evidence, and you would be looking for DNA analysis, which we do most of the DNA analysis in Ohio. There is no case request for analysis that looks anything like this.
So, Jim, it would allegedly be a juvenile, so it might be harder to dig into some of those records. But what the attorney general there has to say is quite compelling, and nobody else who's dug into this seems to be able to find any details about this as well. And Dr. Bernard has stopped doing interviews on the subject now that some of these questions are being asked. So there's a lot of questions floating around social media and beyond about whether they just made this up, whether this started as a hypothetical. What happens if a 10-year-old gets pregnant is beyond 6 weeks? What do you make of what we know so far?
Yeah, if this did not happen, then this really probably ought to be a good martini. Shocks and appalls and horrifies someone the thought that could happen. And it's interesting, for a couple of days, major people going all the way up to the President of the United States spoke about it as if it was confirmed truth. As people noted, the only person who has spoken on the record about this is an outspoken advocate for abortion, an abortionist who, very clearly has a vested interest in keeping abortion legal. And that is the scenario that I think even a whole bunch of people who think of themselves as dedicated pro-lifers might have moral qualms about that, might have deep-rooted troubling about that. I've heard quite a few people argue that a 10-year-old getting pregnant, a girl's body is not meant to give birth at that age, and thus, covered by some sort of health of the mother, life of the mother exemption. It's it's very understandable pro-lifers would find that to be the toughest case. And I think it's a little disingenuous for pro-choice advocates to point to that when, different studies will give you different numbers, but all of them indicate these are an exceptionally small number of the causes of abortions to be performed, anywhere from 1% to 7%. These are not the cause of the vast majority of abortions in this country. So that's the good part of this. The bad part of this is that, a bit like the telephone game, this became commonly accepted fact very, very quickly without anybody doing any fact checking. And I saw a couple of fact checks that basically say, well, no one's confirmed any of the specifics, but a lot of people have reported on it. So thus it must be true. No, that's not how it works. And, Ohio state law enforcement coming out and saying, look, we can find nothing to confirm this. And if God forbid this actually did happen, that the person who did this absolutely should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But apparently there's no word of any indication. Even if you don't want to name the victim, even if you don't want to go into any specifics, you would not extend the same protections to the person accused of raping a 10-year-old. People want to know who that is. You just want that person, and you want that person arrested and charged as quickly as possible. Because if they've already done this to one 10-year-old, God forbid they could do it to others. So you look at all this and add it all up, and it becomes a little hard to believe. It seems a little too perfect to be the sort of thing, you know, a pro-choicer would want to put in front of a pro-lifer to make them feel uncomfortable or conflicted. But I think it's a bad indication that after all this talk about foreign disinformation and all the talk about the dangers of disinformation from social media, that an unverified story like this gets accepted as God's honest truth, you know, so quickly in our politics.
Yeah, that's what makes me wonder if it was a runaway hypothetical or they were that sinister to pretend it was an actual case, which is very odd. It's also weird, Jim, that they always focus on an example or a hypothetical example, perhaps, that makes up about 1% of abortions. Mm-hmm. It's always the rape or the child or the incest. And you can certainly have debates about those things because they are thornier issues. But they never just want to talk about the 98 to 99% of abortions that are done for non-emergency reasons. It's curious why they don't want to focus on those.
I think the social media post that I saw, which we should emphasize, this is not representative of the other reasons, but it was a woman who said that her husband had a vasectomy. And she was having an affair, and she was afraid that she could get pregnant from her affair. And women don't have to be perfect to enjoy their rights, or something was her slogan. And many, many people who were pro-choice said, please stop helping. You're really not a sympathetic victim here. You're really not somebody who people say, oh, you're in a really tough spot there. No, it didn't really work that way. So again, not representative of every woman who wants to have an abortion, but just an indicator that we can cherry pick ugly examples from the other side too, if we want to.
Yeah, absolutely right. And like Janet Yellen saying, well, you might end up poor if some of you people can't have that. So, amazing, just amazing on so many different levels. But let's talk about another one of our great sponsors, and that would be NetChoice, bringing you the podcast in part today. Our country is being rocked by soaring inflation, lackluster leadership, as we've talked about a lot already, and chaos on the world stage. Americans need their legislators to focus on the issues that actually matter and ease the economic pain we are all feeling right now.
Instead, senators like Amy Klobuchar are pushing a big government takeover of America's tech industry through progressive regulations that would worsen inflation and make important digital services like Amazon Prime more expensive and harder to use. Conservatives must block progressive pet projects that will raise prices and undermine our world standing. These lawmakers need to keep American innovation the best in the world.
NetChoice wants you to join it in telling Congress to stop rising prices and reject progressive tech regulations like Senate Resolution 2992. Learn more about this fight and send a letter to your representatives at netchoice.org/2992. This message was brought to you by NetChoice. If we've learned anything from the 2020 election, it's that while the process of counting electoral votes is straightforward, the rules outlined in the Electoral Count Act of 1887 are vague and antiquated. There shouldn't have been any question about whether the vice president could or should have changed the election results. Imagine the next election full of questions about vote irregularities, debates, and recounts of key state votes, except this time it's Vice President Harris being urged to interpret her role in the process as one where she has the right to determine which electoral votes count. Why? Because the Electoral Count Act is too ambiguous. This is why the Presidential Election Project aims to clearly define the role of the vice president and ensure that the role is beyond question. The project urges you to sign up for more information about why reform of the Electoral Count Act is so important. Go to presidentialelectionproject.com to take the first step in learning more. That's presidentialelectionproject.com. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And if you thought the last few presidential election cycles were kind of out of control, well, there are some who want them to get even crazier. Fortunately, it looks like this isn't going to happen, at least in part. But it was Juliana Glover last Friday, over at Politico, writing that if Tucker Carlson decides he wants to run for president, what the left really needs is for Jon Stewart to run for president as well. Now, those who have long political memories know that these two had a dust up on Crossfire nearly 20 years ago now, probably, where Stewart basically blasted Carlson for, making entertainment out of the news, and then decided that The Daily Show wasn't really part of the serious solution here. But nonetheless, there are people who think that Tucker Carlson versus Jon Stewart is where our culture is heading and could be the presidential matchup for 2024. And Juliana Glover seems to think that perhaps it should be. Now, for his part, Jon Stewart has already said, "I am not running for president." He tweeted after Politico published this story simply, quote, "No, thank you." So, Jim, apparently people haven't had enough of the entertainment side of politics these last few cycles. They got to keep going further and further down this path. But fortunately, it looks like we might not get too much further this cycle. But we'll see.
Greg, Jon Stewart has made me laugh in the past. I think he's actually a very talented comedian. I think he's much more talented than his successors. But that said, if you're right of center, chances are at some point you've noticed what we could, the phenomenon we often would say, clown nose on, clown nose off defense for Jon Stewart, that he would, allegedly his show was a comedy, but you know, clearly Jon Stewart had very strong views. And at some point he would speak very seriously about things. Oh, by the way, give him credit. He really did pound the table when it came to getting aid for 9/11, first responders, firemen, stuff like that, and say, arguing that those folks had gotten ignored by the government. And I, you know, you don't have to agree with everything Jon Stewart says to think he's a guy who generally wants to make the world a better place, at least as he sees fit. That having been said, at some point, someone would point out that he was, you know, not giving the other side their due or not fairly characterizing the other side. And then he'd say, "Oh, what do you expect? It's a comedy show. Clown nose on. I'm just a comedian. What are you so upset about?" And then, of course, Rolling Stone would say something like, you know, "Jon Stewart is the most important journalist in America." By the way, I think comparisons like that were not good for Jon Stewart, and I think it was not good for journalism, by the way. But anyway, so here we are in 2022. We've had the host of The Apprentice become president. Minnesota had the experience of Jesse Ventura being the governor. There was talk for a while that Oprah should run. Oz is running for the Senate and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just thinking, like, I would really like people who are allegedly serious, you know, voices in our politics to recognize that the job of the president is not to entertain you on television. If you think Tucker Carlson is the most entertaining and enthralling guy you've ever, that's great, great. You know, at 8 to 9 on Fox News Channel, he is there to tell you his perspective of how the world is working, what's going right, what's going wrong, how terrific Orban is, you know, fine, great. God bless you, Tucker Carlson, go do what you want to do. And the same thing for Jon Stewart. This doesn't mean they belong behind the Resolute desk, because the job of the president is not just to entertain you. I seriously think some people say, well, you know, I've seen Jon Stewart give a speech and I've seen the president give a speech, so they can do the same thing. One of the reasons I think Jon Stewart is saying no thank you is that Jon Stewart does not want to write letters to the families of slain American servicemen, because he gave the order that sent them into harm's way. The presidency is serious business. And also, by the way, the other observation I'm kind of thinking about this is the comedians are there to make people happy. They're there to make people laugh. And God bless them. The world needs that. Or at least comedians used to do that. Now they kind of go for clapter, you know. Trump is an orange, big orange idiot. You know, that seems to be the Colbert Show on a regular basis. The point of the president's job is got to make hard decisions all day long. And you should not run for president if you are not prepared to disappoint people almost all the time. Don't let anybody tell you that the solutions are easy. I think Kevin Williamson said, everything looks easy when you don't know the first thing about it. Every policy has trade-offs. Every policy is going to frustrate or disappoint someone. When you are president, if you come out of your presidency with everybody liking you, it probably means you didn't do very much, right? If you want to get this stuff done, at some point you're going to have to irk somebody. And that, I think, I'm kind of baffled as to why people who are celebrities, who are famous from some other aspect of their life, like, is Dr. Oz really going to be happy in the U.S. Senate? If he wins, great. I hope he's happy. I hope he finds a great sense of satisfaction for it. But, you know, I kind of would prefer not somebody who was known for, you know, telling Oprah to eat more beets to lose weight or whatever the hell he was doing. You know, like Pat Toomey was a guy who looked at the federal budget and just said, oh, my God, there's so much waste in there. There's so much stuff in there that doesn't belong in there at all. I went through all the numbers. I'm an absolute nerd. Here's what we need to get rid of. And that's what you belong. That's what you need in the Senate. And in the presidency, you need somebody who's comfortable making tough decisions, not someone who's there to put on a show. I don't think good for Jon Stewart for recognizing he would not want that job. And any other celebrity out there is looking at the presidency saying, God, wouldn't inauguration be great? Wouldn't I look good at the inaugural ball? And you got to make really hard decisions all day long. And, you know, I think the whole bunch of men who've ended up in the presidency and then realized the job was a lot harder than they expected. I think there was somebody who once said that there are two types of people who end up in the presidency. Somebody who wants people, guys who want to be someone or guys who want to do something. Please, 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 America, elect the ones who want to do something, not be somebody.
Man, if Carlson's
Alec Baldwin's an actor, too.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin, I think, is probably not in the best possible position to run for anything right now, unless it's from the law.
Maybe he could reinvent himself as a Second Amendment activist.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Wow.
I can hear the groans from here.
Yes. Dear yes, listeners. Indeed. I think we'll probably exit now that we have the opportunity. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Do subscribe to the podcast if you don't already and tell a friend about us as well. Thank you so much for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Remember, you can get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch Podcast. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at @Dateline_DC. Have a great Tuesday. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
Much of the media doesn't cover some of the most important stories of the day. I'm Byron York from The Byron York Show. In my latest episodes, I will discuss how the January 6th hearings have become a completely scripted television production to fit a Democratic narrative, and how no one is still asking why so many important details are still being hidden from the public. Don't forget, download and subscribe to the daily No Chit Chat podcast. I don't talk about every single issue, just the ones you need to know the most. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.